In our deep dive this week, we take a look at commodities. We're looking at everything from platinum stocks to gold stocks to copper stocks to nickel stocks and everything in between. We're joined in studio by a good friend of ours, Seleho One Take Drake Tsatsi, who's here to shed some light on the commodity space. He's a commodity specialist at Anchor Capital. Seleho, thanks so much for taking the time. Thanks for joining us.
Awesome to be here.
If South Africa, or actually if the world markets could be a rap album, what are we titling the rap album?
It has something to do with a comeback. Like I think there was that LL song, Don't Call It a Comeback. I've been here for something like that. Like, I think the world's been waiting for a comeback of sorts from commodities markets. We've started to get that in the last few, let's call it days or weeks or two. If you look at what's happened, particularly with base metals, iron ore's had a bit of a bump since this Chinese stimulus package. Share prices definitely have really rallied from their lows. So I think we're seeing some sort of a comeback.
There's so much to dig into, right? There's iron ore prices, there's Sibanye going into, South32 going into manganese, Sibanye diversifying into the European business, Amplats falling off of the top 40 in terms of how they measure that. Yeah. Where do we even start?
Suddenly everyone's a chrome miner.
Where do we even start? Let's go with the traditionals, pick the traditionals and then move into the diversifieds and the new age metals, I guess.
You want to go with PGMs?
PGMs. Because we love those.
I love your comments. I mean, everyone's saying, you know, we're a chrome miner now. It's definitely something that's coming up because PGMs obviously have been under pressure, whereas chrome has held up quite well. If you look at the PGM basket price, palladium has gone back up above $1,000 an ounce.
Platinum did this week as well. I saw that this week as well,
back above $1,000 an ounce. But despite that, if you look in rand terms at the rand basket price, so rands per platinum ounce, we're actually still roughly today where we were in June of 2023. And although there's been a lot of volatility between then and now, roughly we've stayed at about 24,000-25,000 rand per ounce, per platinum ounce. So although there's been a lot of volatility, sadly, we're kind of where we started.
Yeah. So we went through a whole year and achieved nothing.
And they're still profitable at these levels, just not much.
So it depends on the company. But yeah, I would say break even to slightly profitable for the industry. Yeah.
Unlike Kumba, which is profitable at pretty much most levels, and we're finally seeing some recovery in the iron ore pricing. We're finally seeing the Kumba share price. If you look at that chart, it's the exact opposite of the chart that we advocate for on the show. I mean, it goes from the top left of the screen to the bottom right instead of the other way. And we're starting to see some recovery. I mean, granted, we're probably back around the 370, 380 rand level there, but coming off of 600 rand plus per share in recent times, that's not the best place to be. I mean, it's a good time to buy, I suppose. Is it a good time to get into some of these commodities?
Yeah, I think if you look at where iron ore is today, so we have, as we said, had a little bit of a bump after the Chinese stimulus, but we're still sub $100. So relative to where, I think in COVID 2020, we hit all-time highs for iron ore. You know, we're well below those levels. Mm-hmm. But I think for Kumba, what's nice about the business is you kind of know what you're going to get in terms of capital allocation. You know they're going to pay 70-80% plus of their earnings as a dividend. It's generally on a relatively low multiple. Yeah, it's pretty, I think, pretty simple, does what it should do on the tin. Some of the issues are volume. So Transnet, as we know, has been an issue for them. So volumes, I think, were quite impacted in the first half. But I think on a longer term view, it's a decent a decent place to look.
The Transnet thing as well is quite interesting because we've seen a lot of companies come out and comment and actually say we're happier with the conversations we're having. Happier, which I suppose if you'd been depressed for the last 3-4 years, anything will make you happier. Yeah.
But we have seen, and I've said it before, I'm just in Head and they're in Afrimat, they've got that construction side of the business. And he for a year now has been saying Transnet is coming and buying stuff for us for the first time in ages. So stuff is going in the right direction.
It's encouraging because we need that as a country.
We do. I mean, absolutely. I mean, not just for Kumba, but just for, I mean, all exports. Of us.
We touched on this a little earlier and you've brought it up again. The Chinese stimulus. Yes. Traditionally, I mean, clearly if anyone had any doubts about the impact that it then has on the commodities space, this week would have shown you exactly how much influence China has over all of these things, right? And when we look at the metals that have rallied. It's the traditionals. It's not the EV metals. It's not the nickels, the manganese. It's the old school stuff, the platinum, the iron ore and all. Does that mean that we're over the EV craze? Did I say that too loud?
I don't think you can say that out loud. Definitely if you look at the rate of, or the penetration rate for EVs globally, although it is still climbing, the rate at which it's climbing is slowing. So I think we hit about 12% last year for total global car sales were EVs. But there is a slowdown. I mean, UBS, for example, have pulled back their numbers in terms of their forecasts of that pace of change. And people seem to be shifting a bit more towards the hybrid story, which the PGM miners are really touting. They're saying, hey, guys, look, you know, it's not all doom and gloom.
That's it,
So I think that is a relevant point. I think there is a bit of a slowdown there.
Also, China's very much, I mean, yes, China's big in EVs, but they're also very much an old school economy.
Mm.
Yeah, they make fancy iPhones and everything else, but they also have steel mills galore and, you know, et cetera. They they've kind of finished that industrialization. But, you know, 1.4 billion people, I mean, second biggest economy in the world.
You're certainly going to continuously need some form of development, whether it's on the steel side, whether it's on the platinum side, especially if and China's leading the EV conversation, so to speak, in terms of the amount of vehicles they've been able to put out into the market.
And price points.
And price point, right? So if that economy is the one spurring on the PGM space, then clearly, I mean, you know, it says something about the quality of the platinum metals and the PGM metals in general, right? How does this tie in with the US? Because we're going into elections in a couple of months. The US markets or the US elections are going to drive markets, whether we like it or not. Are they going to drive commodities? Are they going to influence commodities as much as we think they will, given that we're seeing it in the financial stuff, we're seeing it in other stocks, but we haven't seen if Donald Trump comes back, then commodities are going to go sideways. That's more a kind of an Eastern part of the world conversation.
Yeah, I think if you look at what happened in 2016, obviously there was a huge impact when Trump was elected. At first, the world was freaking out and markets were crashing, and then everyone was like, hold on, maybe this is going to be good for the world. And so no one really, I think if you look at what happened then, no one really knew what the implications were. Mm. I think this time, perhaps we have a bit of a better idea of what the Trump presidency means for the world and means for China.
Mm.
One of the interesting points or views that I saw was this idea that if Kamala Harris becomes president, she might actually end up being just as tough on China because she doesn't want to be seen to be
soft.
Yes. Mm. So, you know, she's almost pressured to kind of follow suit.
Which for us doesn't, sorry, go for it.
For many ways, Biden has intensified what Trump started. The difference is Trump did it on Twitter, Biden does it via official channels.
If Trump comes back, I suppose then that means the market already knows what it's getting, as Salo mentioned. It's like we're not...
All caps tweets.
All caps tweets, yes. And an endorsement from Elon Musk.
Yeah.
So then what do we get into? So then if we're now, I mean, and we look at the likes of South32 transitioning into manganese, the likes of Sibanye, Neil Frohnemann has been on the diversified bandwagon since it started. He probably pioneered.
Started as a gold miner.
That's right? And you look at Sibanye's offering now, and it's probably the most diversified miner we're seeing in South Africa, at least. Where to, if we're looking at the commodity space and saying which commodities are going to have a good 2025 or going to run hard, because I've had weekly conversations with David Shapiro around, have we hit the bottom? And every week we say, yes, we've hit the bottom. And the next week we catch up, it's no, we didn't hit the bottom last week. This week is the bottom. But we finally seem to have hit the bottom, which, again, I could be saying a very different thing this time next week. If we've hit the bottom, what do we get into?
So for me, I think copper looks interesting. And I'm probably the millionth person in commodities to say that. But what's interesting about copper is the demand supply outlook looks very imbalanced. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot more demand to come over the next decade or two versus supply that's actually being brought online. And that's coming from not just Chinese infrastructure or housing, but also as the world transitions to a greener economy, copper is very important. So for
example, those chips from NVIDIA got a lot of copper in them.
Exactly. Yeah, these data centers need quite a bit of copper. So if you look over, let's say 2030 to 2040, it is a bit of a longer timeline, but it does look like the copper price should do quite well given demand-supply projections. And so in terms of actual companies, I think if you look at Glencore's an interesting one because they're quite copper-focused. They went off to Teck Resources mostly for their copper. BHP went off to Anglo's, and I think it was mostly for their copper. So I think you can see by how some of these diversified miners are acting that copper is top of mind for them. South32 actually has a nice copper portfolio that they're building. So I think for a lot of these miners, that's an imperative.
And copper did like China, the China story. Yeah. It's had a good week.
Yeah, so, I mean, Si, the last time you and I looked at copper was probably at the start of the pods almost 3 months ago, right?
Yeah.
And this month alone, it's done
9%. Yeah.
So that's a very interesting story. We are approaching kind of we're in that $10,000 level, and that has been highs with the exception of that $11,000 touch.
I got the per pound per, not per ton price, but I mean, it's up 18% year to date. I'm not going to argue with that.
Is it a good time to get in now? Well, I suppose given that you said we're looking at running for not just 12 months. And I think that's the other thing with commodities, much like equities and unlike some of the other markets, if commodities run hot, they run hot for a while.
Yeah.
I'm old enough to remember the rally up into 2007.
Mm-hmm.
Man, that thing lasted 4 years, and it was just, and I remember palladium, what was the platinum breaks 1,000, and everyone's like, yo, 1,000. Man, it went to 2,000. Oh. Like,
wow.
Like $1,000 was just warming up. It was madness.
Do we think that the pricing of things like gold, right, is, I had a weird thought about it. The gold price kind of came down, finally swept that liquidity at 1650 during the pandemic. Obviously, we saw the rally, we touched 2000. Everyone was like, we'll never see 2000. And then I remember when that happened, you and I spoke and we called 2,500. And we said, we don't know if it'll happen by the end of the year. We called 2.5. We're up at 2.6 at the moment. We did it with Moshima as well.
And she that
called,
seemed high.
Right? And 2.5
was... So for
was,
the record, Moshima messaged me in the week because her call was 2.610.
She's like... Right? And she said anything north of... She said if it breaks above 2,400, goes above 2,400, it's going to 2.610. And it did exactly that
and
as
it
worked.
And
the
next target was 2,690. And I think we're there too.
I think we're there as well, yeah. The weird thing I thought about gold was the gold price moving up now creates value in a depressed global system, right? So global demand has been down. Everything's been under pressure for 4 years. But if the value of the gold price, or if the gold price continues to increase or continues to stay at these levels for a sustained period of time, it means countries holding gold reserves suddenly are not as poor as they were or as disadvantaged from an economic system point of view. Maybe that's how we avoid a global recession. The gold price keeps pumping and keeps everything alive. It would make sense.
Yeah, and there's a compelling story. I mean, we've spoken around the central bank is buying as sort of, we see a weaponization of the dollar post-Ukraine, Russia. We're seeing Chinese private investors buying because their property's underwater and their equity market's underwater. And there is a sort of a story gathering there which might have more legs.
How much more?
I don't know. Look, there's an Okomar Twitter stream saying $10,000. But then he's also been saying $10,000 since before Twitter was even a thing. So who knows?
Okay. One of those Bitcoin bulls who calls $5 million on Bitcoin at some point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm scared to see what the world looks like with gold at $10,000 because I feel like things must have...
Well, that's my worry, right? If gold goes to $10,000, it's great, but can I eat it? Because I need to eat it. I always say gold at $10,000, more important is I need water and pumpkin seeds.
Oh, okay. Pumpkin seeds. That's an interesting choice.
They're easy to grow.
Okay.
You need food. You can't eat food. Gold.
You always need food.
Yeah.
And even with gold, you can't use gold to make food. Well, you can use gold to buy the seeds and all of that, but
I'm
can't use it to actually make food.
My seeds for gold.
That's it.
If the world is ending, my seeds are worth way more than your gold.
Fair enough. That's a fair point. So we're bullish on commodities as a whole, or are there certain commodities where we're like, Maybe not. And I say that because we were chatting about Sasol before we came on air. It's under a lot of pressure. I look at the likes of Exxaro, Thungela as well, the coal space, kind of the black sheep, for lack of a better pun. But nonetheless, still viable, still required within the global ecosystem, I suppose.
Yes, so I think definitely with commodities, we need to be selective and look at subsectors. So, I mean, we touched on PGMs. I think we're probably still a little cautious, actually, on the PGM space, even though we've had quite a rally in share prices over the last couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. Just because of what we talked about earlier, that actual basket price not really moving. We need to see a bit more in terms of that basket price before we get excited. So I think, they would still be a bit cautious. Base metals in general, so not just copper, but base metals in general, I think we're a bit more enthusiastic. So the aluminium value chain, for example, which South32 is quite big in, alumina, bauxite, aluminium. If you look at the alumina price this year, it's done pretty well. Yet South32 has, in terms of its share price, has lagged, partially because of some operational issues. But I think that's an interesting space to be in. So I think base metals in general, also because of long-term demand drivers, I think it's a more attractive space to be in. Mm-hmm. Gold is a very tricky one because, as we've said, you know, there's huge momentum in it. But there's quite a few charts that give you a pause for concern or make you think twice. So there was a great chart from a sell-side analyst at RMB Morgan Stanley, and they were just showing the ratio of the gold SA mining companies to the PGM SA mining companies, and basically showing that the gold sector is at an all-time high relative to PGMs, which makes sense. We know PGMs obviously is under pressure, gold's doing well, but just when you see the scale of the outperformance, it makes you think, well, okay, I mean, these are all still precious metals. Should that outperformance be that large?
I mean, there's an argument that gold is more than just industrial, PGMs more industrial, but I think your point's well made. Absolutely. I mean, should it be that large?
Yeah.
On that note, I've always wondered, why are we not considered amongst one of the wealthiest countries in the world? And I ask that because of the rhodium price. Has anyone looked at the rhodium price, actually looked at it? $152,000 a kilo. And South Africa, if I'm not mistaken, is the world's largest producer and world's largest reserve holder of rhodium, right? So if we're basing things on a metal like that, gold's not even in the same race. Why is no one taking us seriously? That's my question. Why is no one taking us seriously?
Yeah, I think PGMs in general, we're like 70% generally of PGMs.
I think we're the leading exporter of platinum in the world as well. Why is no one taking us seriously about rhodium?
I think people do take us seriously on...
Okay, I'm not inviting a US invasion here because we kind of know how those things
end up.
But
rhodium is a small part of the basket. Mm. You get your PGMs and there's all the others.
Iridium, ruthenium.
The big ones are platinum and palladium. And then a little bit of rhodium on the side. I mean, that little ETF at 42,500 rand back in early 2021.
Mm.
Yeah. Standard Bank, who have it, and they charge, I think, a nice little 0.5%, 1%.
Oh,
man, they were making money for jam.
Money for jam. Wow. We'll leave it at that. But we will say this on the commodity space, please take us seriously. That's the deep dive.